Hello and welcome to today's news conference held by Pfeiffer, Wolf, Carr, and Kane, PWCK. And today you'll be hearing from six speakers, and before we introduce them, I want to bring the operator on the line to explain how the Q&A period will work. Operator?
During the question and answer session, you may ask a question by pressing star then one on your touchtone phone. If you would like to remove yourself from the queue, you may press star then two. We please ask that you limit yourself to one question and a single follow-up. If you need to ask an additional question, please know that you may press star one to rejoin the queue. Thank you.
Thank you. And we will repeat those instructions about how members of the news media can pose questions at the start of the Q&A period. But first, as I mentioned, you'll be hearing from six speakers. First will be Joseph Pfeiffer, attorney and managing shareholder at PWCK. Second will be Scott Song, a victim living in Rancho Mirage, California. Third will be Scott Kaiser, a victim living in Toms River, New Jersey. Fourth will be Eldridge Parker, a victim living in Tampa, Florida. Fifth will be Patricia Cook, a victim living in Tarzana, California. And finally, sixth will be Jason Kane, attorney and shareholder, PWCK. So let's kick it off with our first speaker, Joseph Pfeiffer, attorney and managing shareholder, PWCK. Joe?
Good afternoon on the East Coast and good morning on the West Coast where I happen to be today. My name is Joseph Pfeiffer and I'm an attorney and the managing shareholder of Pfeiffer, Wolf, Carr & Kane. PWCK, as we refer to ourselves, we have offices in Cleveland, New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles, St. Louis, and New Orleans. And we're working together on this project with the firm out of Columbia, South Carolina, that we've worked with for a long time, named Reichard and Protopapas. They are the ones who initially uncovered this scheme. Today, we, along with Reichard and Protopapas, are announcing that we are filing a national wave of five lawsuits filed against some of the key middlemen who lined up victims in at least a $100 million predatory retirement investment scheme. We're seeking recovery for these swindled investors from insurance agents, investment advisors, and brokers in the Los Angeles area, the Houston area, Chicago, Northern Florida, in Philadelphia/New Jersey, coast to coast, all the right way around this country, because that's where this stuff was sold. It was sold everywhere. My law partner, Jason Kane, will be talking about how this scheme worked and what we are currently doing to get investors' money back. I would like to focus on the big picture here for a minute, if you'll indulge me. The reason I love this job is that I'm able to help good people who've been badly hurt by professionals who really should have known better. My parents are about the ages of most of these victims, and my firm takes these cases very personally. Here we're talking about a 72-year-old with no retirement plan who was pressured to invest every penny she had in the world into these investments. An 89-year-old Korean War vet who was urged to sell his only asset, his home, and put all that money into this horrible financial plan that paid the investment advisors and the other middlemen significant commissions, but ultimately caused ruin for my clients. And another client you'll hear from today, a landscape company owner with no investing experience. These are people who worked hard, they saved their money, and they tried to make better lives for their families. They're good people. They're not speculators. They're not gamblers. They thought they were putting their money into a conservative program that had been vetted by many financial professionals, including the agent or investment advisor that sold this to them, and the distribution agents and warehousers that vetted this prior to even getting to the investment advisors. Instead, they were sold expensive insurance, worthless securities, and now the only chance that many of them have at anywhere near a comfortable retirement is holding the financial professionals accountable. These blue-collar and middle-class Americans were among the thousands of victims of an elaborate investment scheme that succeeded in large part through the credibility lent to the scheme by a network of middlemen. And who do I mean by middlemen? I mean insurance agents, I mean stockbrokers, I mean financial planners, investment advisors, and others who roped in trusting investors into making a financial plan that included FIP, that's future income payments, in their financial plan. Also at fault here are the warehousers and the distributors that brought these products to the investment advisors. And we are investigating the trustees and custodians that held these investments, as well as the insurance companies whose products were ultimately sold along with FIP. What was FIP? Well, in reality, FIP was run out of a Las Vegas suburban strip mall by a Californian ex-felon named Scott Cohen. You could really stop there and know that perhaps this guy raising $100 million or more, and I think it's a lot more, is not a good idea. Scott Cohen, by the way, is nowhere to be found. We've got a pretty extensive research department. I bet the organizations on the phone do too. If you guys can find a picture of him on the internet or any of his things still left up on the internet, you are doing a better job than we can. He seems to be just gone. Several states have ruled that the FIP pension purchases were illegal loans at the usurious rates of up to 200%. Because of the mounting regulatory pressure and multiple cease and desist orders, FIP stopped collecting payments from pensioners or making payments to investors around April 2018. FIP was a precarious house of cards where Scott Cohen and his army of willing middlemen made off with huge profits, leaving investors holding the bags. The loss of the monthly income streams and high-cost insurance products and the resulting trauma on their financial futures that investors thought they had purchased, it has been devastating for them. In many of these cases, these trusted individuals tied up all their money in this scheme. The bottom line is that the massive scale of this investment swindle could not have happened without an eager and complicit network of brokers, investment advisors, financial planners, insurance agents, and other middlemen like wholesalers, distributors, and life insurance companies who facilitated the placing of these products into financial plans that included FIP and the sale of expensive and unnecessary life insurance products. And Jason Kane, my partner, is going to talk about that in just about a moment. But first, I think you're going to hear from some of the victims of the middlemen that we've been talking about. That concludes my opening statement, and I really look forward to taking your questions during the Q&A.
Great. Again, that was attorney Joseph Pfeiffer, PWCK. And we'll go to our second speaker, Scott Son, a victim living in Rancho Mirage, California. Go ahead, Scott.
Hi. My name's Scott Son. I live in Rancho Mirage, California, which is near Palm Springs in the Southern California desert. I just recently sold my landscape company in January of 2016. Hope to retire. I needed an additional money to supplement the sale of my company, which I had invested with John Marshall, my investment advisor. I'd been with him for about 10 years, and he assured me this investment to FIP would be safe, very little risk, and all I really needed to do was supplement what I was already getting for the sale of my company. My wife and I gave him a little over $350,000. All we wanted to do with that $350,000 is try to get $50,000 a year for the next 10 years. We later found out, very shortly found out after we gave him the money, that this FIP company was pretty much worthless, and it just made things terrible around the house here. We've worked hard for our money and to give it to somebody we trusted to invest it properly. I have no, I'm a landscaper. I don't know anything about investing money. Unfortunately, we gave our money to the wrong person to invest it for us, and now here we are.
All right. Again, that was Scott Son, a victim living in Rancho Mirage, California. And let's proceed to our third speaker, Scott Kaiser, a victim living in Toms River, New Jersey. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay, I'm Scott Kaiser. I live in Toms River, New Jersey, and I found out about this listening to New Jersey 101.5. It's a local radio station, a reputable radio station, and there was a advertiser Milberg, J.D. Milberg. They advertised, and I thought that it would be a good investment, safe investment, you know, for my retirement. So I called, and they made an appointment, and Dan Sharp, their financial advisor, came to my house and went over the, you know, an investment strategy, which included an IUL, and they were going to use, and we used FIP as a tool to fund the IUL, Index Universal Life. And I cashed in my IRA and my savings that I worked my whole life for, you know, to come to put the $100,000 into it, you know, 25 into the IUL and about 75 into the FIP. And now we got maybe 10 months of payments as promised. And back in March, they ceased. So here we are.
Okay. Again, that was Scott Kaiser, a victim living in Toms River, New Jersey. Let's go to our fourth speaker, Eldridge Parker, a victim living in Tampa, Florida. Eldridge?
Thank you. I'm Eldridge Parker of Tampa, Florida. I was in the process of retiring when I met Derek Afazi. He recommended FIP and had me invest $255,000 into it. Also, at the same time, he had me put $224,000 of my money into an annuity. As a result, I can't even access the retirement monies. As if that was not enough, Afazi told me to go back to work so I could include my new paycheck with FIP. This has been a disaster for me. I had to sell my car to create an emergency fund. I'm sorry. My current monthly expenses are $1,352, and I only take home $1,100 per month from my full-time job. So now I have to work additional shifts just to try and cover my monthly expenses. My advice to other people who may be in my situation is this. Please think long and hard before you trust any financial professional who wants all your money. And if you have been ripped off, please contact Piper, Wolf, Carr, and Kane and get help. It's truly your only hope of getting your nest egg back. Thank you so much.
Again, that was Eldridge Parker, a victim living in Tampa, Florida. Let's go to our fifth speaker, Patricia Cook, a victim living in Tarzana, California. Trish?
Hello, my name is Patricia Cook. I live in Tarzana, California. My husband and I are military veterans. My husband was in a forced retirement situation in the summer of 2015, and I had been listening to Doug Andrews at Live Abundant for 20 years. Many, many years listening what financial experts they were. Because I believed in him, and this company was supposedly to help older people have enough money to live, not outlive your money and have nothing. So because of Doug Andrews, we attended a couple of these seminars in the summer of 2015 because my husband was only a few months away from the forced retirement. And attending these, they convinced us that we were old school thinking because we're blue-collar people from Ohio. We worked all of our lives. We were almost to pay our house off, and they convinced us to use the equity in our house to refi, to double our mortgage. Actually, they wanted us to do more than double, but we couldn't qualify for it. So we refied our house to take $300,000 out when my husband was going to be out of a job in 3 months, to more than double our mortgage so we could buy this insurance policy through this FIP in order to, that was going to pay our mortgage to, they're saying this, to utilize the equity in our house because we were not savvy investors or whatever. So we did what they told us to do, and we've refied our house. So when all of this fell apart, in the interim, the financial advisor, we were assigned a person, both of these, Doug Andrews and the financial advisor, of 40-plus years of experience with credentials. We checked them out on the Better Business Bureau A+. These were people with decades of experience telling us that, you know, we're old school. We should not pay our house off as I wanted to. This is the way we needed to do it. So we followed their advice and put $300,000 into FIP. But this whole thing falls apart in April. Simultaneously, the only thing we had left was my husband's 401. And through his company, when he retired, they were telling us that the previous administration, that the whole market was going to go to zero. And if we didn't take the money out of where it was, that we were going to lose everything. We would have nothing. So all, not to mention, my husband had to get a full-time job after he retired, and so did I, to pay this high mortgage. So they not only convinced us we have this mortgage until we're 98 years old, that we had to start over, and the annuity too, that they talked us into putting in this stupid annuity that we can't even touch until we're 75 years old. I'm sorry, I'm very upset. That's all.
Again, that was Patricia Cook, a victim living in Tarzana, California. We're going to go to our sixth and final speaker making opening remarks. That's Jason Kane, attorney and shareholder, PWCK. Go ahead, Jason.
Thank you. As you just heard, my name is Jason Kane. I'm an attorney and partner with Pfeiffer, Wolf, Carr, and Kane. I think a key thing for people to understand here is that this was not a typical financial swindle where a charismatic charlatan does most of the heavy lifting himself. No, FIP flourished because it enlisted a willing army of other financial professionals. It was the involvement of investors trusted and often local financial professionals who persuaded the victims of FIP to invest their hard-earned savings in retirement funds. You can go online to FIPlawsuit.com to see who is being sued and where. What I would like to do is talk a little about the scheme, which is somewhat elaborate. I break it down like this. First, you have the investors. Those are the victims we are suing on behalf of today. Investors were encouraged to scrape together all possible funds from retirement accounts, savings, and home equity refis to buy into FIP. Investors paid a large upfront sum to FIP in order to buy a monthly income stream for a set term, usually 5 or 10 years, under FIP's pension advance arrangement targeting individuals with fixed pensions. These people were often retired police officers, teachers, and veterans. As part of the scheme, most investors also were encouraged to purchase life insurance policies and indexed universal life insurance and fund the premiums with their FIP income stream. So that's one part of the picture. That's what happened to the investors, our clients. Then there's the second part, the people with the pensions. FIP, quote-unquote, purchased the future income from the pensioners on an upfront, lump sum, and heavily discounted basis. Then there is the third part of the picture, the people who made money off of this. There is FIP itself, but there is also the financial professionals that promoted the scheme to investors and collected healthy commissions. As an aside, it should be noted that the financial professionals who sold both FIP and an insurance policy used the same scheme to make two commissions. It's the ultimate double dip. When regulators shut FIP down, many of our clients lost not only their FIP investment, but were also left holding a very expensive life insurance policy that was sold to them with FIP. If you are thinking, well, any investment can fail or go bad, you really have to read the complaints that we have posted online. If you do, you will see that these cases are true horror stories in terms of lack of disclosure to investors. The cases include a long laundry list of disclosure fails. I'll just mention a few here. Investors were never told that Scott Cohn, the sole owner and manager of FIP, is a convicted felon who has served time in a federal penitentiary for selling counterfeit computer equipment. Investors were never told that FIP is a small private company operated by a handful of individuals and is not associated with or backed by any financial institution or other reputable entity. Investors were not told that the FIP cash flows are completely illiquid and that U.S. federal law prohibits the assignment of federal pensions. Much of what I do as an attorney is tied up with cases involving brokers and financial planners. So I see a lot of cases of financial professionals failing to do due diligence, going off the deep end to rake in commissions, and failing to make sure an investor is suitable for an investment. In the case of FIP, the people who are being sued today could not have done more to fail their clients on every front. No serious-minded person would have believed this was a legitimate business opportunity. 1 hour of due diligence research would have raised a dozen red flags, and there is no excuse for being so blinded by greed for sky-high commissions that you put the most inappropriate possible people in one of the riskiest investments I've ever seen. These victims that you've heard from today deserve justice. They deserve to have their financial independence back, and these so-called financial professionals must be made to pay for their part in the FIP scam. They let these investors down and took them to the cleaners for every penny they had in some cases. We intend to make sure that they have to answer for that. That concludes my opening statement, and I look forward to taking your questions.
Again, that was Attorney Jason Kane, PWCK, and that takes us to the question and answer portion of the call, and we want to emphasize that the Q&A period is only for reporters. We're going to bring the operator on the line to explain how members of the media can ask a question. Operator?
Thank you. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one on your touchtone phone. If you decide to withdraw your question, please press star, then two to remove yourself from the list. Please limit yourself to one question and a single follow-up. If you need to ask an additional question, please know that you may press star one to rejoin the queue.
Thank you, operator. And just for everybody on the call, you can access materials and information at FIPLawsuit.com. That's FIPLawsuit.com. And a streaming audio replay, all sorts of good stuff, all available there. But if you do have questions or want to be connected with any of the speakers or need additional info, contact Max Carlin at 703-276-3255. Again, 703-276-3255. Operator, let's go to our first question.
Okay, our first question comes from the Cleveland Plain Dealer, Teresa Murray with the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. My first question is, you talk about this network of financial professionals or the middlemen who were involved with this. How many do you believe were involved? Did they all work for FIP or were brokers or representatives of FIP or what's the relationship?
That's an excellent question. This is Joe Pfeiffer responding to it. We believe that there are about 368 investment professionals across the country that sold FIP and participated in the scheme where they were selling FIP and typically also selling universal index life insurance policies. They did not work for FIP. FIP was just a product that they sold among many. Typically, some of them work for broker-dealers, some of them work for investment advisors, and some of them were life insurance agents. That's what we've discovered so far. So they worked for a wide variety of different investment advisories, life insurance companies, and broker-dealers. Mostly they were trusted financial professionals. Frankly, I'm not so sure that most of the people that I represent know much of the difference, because when you go in to meet with someone who would be have a life insurance license only, they would refer to themselves as a wealth architect or a financial planner or something along those lines. And so what they actually did and what their titles were confusing to people, but that's what we found.
And then my follow-up is, it's products that you folks discussed were a mix of insurance products, annuities, you know, got kind of loans, something that's not regulated. Do all of these fall under any one category of products that were being sold, such as annuities or insurance or investments or loans, or were they all kinds of things?
Well, they were all kinds of things. They were typically sold with universal index life insurance policies, which is just a very expensive life insurance product that if you don't fund it properly, you end up losing all your money in. So that's a life insurance product, definitely, and that was oftentimes sold with FIP. And what FIP really was Scott Kahn, the felon, going out and getting military pensioners to give up part of their pension for a lump sum and charging them like a usurious rate around 200% or so, and then repackaging those sales, that stream of income, and then selling it out through these distribution networks that ultimately got it to the financial professionals that got it to our clients. That's in a nutshell how that worked. And the problem, well, one of the many problems is that nobody along the way, the ultimate investment advisor, life insurance salesman, financial professional, whatever you want to call them, that sold this stuff never did any due diligence to see whether or not this was a real investment that could be collected upon. And ultimately, the states found that these investments could not be collected upon. So what they sold was essentially worthless paper. But not only did they not do their due diligence, the people who brought them the product, the distributors, the people that are supposed to vet this before it gets to the financial professionals, another level of vetting let everybody down in this case. And ultimately, we're looking at some of the accounting firms and the custodians and other people that should have known better than to allow a product that was backed by worthless paper to be sold to my clients and ultimately wipe them out. So that's what this is about, I guess.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, operator, let's go to our next question.
And our next question is from Len Boslovic with Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Please go ahead.
Hi. I wonder if you could provide any kind of information on the magnitude of the fees or commissions that these agents earned, both on from FIP and from the life insurance policies.
Sure. They were making Jason, I'm sorry. Did you want to go ahead?
Well, I was going to say, you know, like I mentioned in my comments, you know, you've got, you know, one corpus of an investment, and really the brokers or financial advisors are setting themselves up to make two commissions. What we've seen from FIP is that the sellers of FIP, you know, the financial professionals would make between 6 and 10%. And then, you know, the life insurance policies that they were selling in conjunction are notoriously high commission products. You know, I've seen them as high as, you know, as far as a first-year premium goes, as much as 90% of a first-year premium going to the selling agent and or his office. And then there's a trailing commission that the financial professional gets, much smaller, but still a trailing commission on any subsequent premiums that are paid.
And so this is Joe Pfeiffer again. To sum that up a little bit, it's about as much commission as you could possibly make with the money that was available for these folks. And they weren't the only ones making commission. People up and down the line were doing it too. You know, they had to share some of their commission with the people that brought them the product, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. And my follow-up would be, and how did they – I think you answered this for the insurance, that there's the first year and then the trailing commissions. But on FIP, did they get that up front or as
yes.
the client? Okay. Thank you.
Okay, operator, let's proceed to our next question.
All right, our next question is from Alex Ebert with Bloomberg BNA. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much for your time on this. To either of the attorneys, can you talk here about whether or not your wave of suits today is precedented by other suits against the company on these regards? You know, is this the first batch of suits against financial planners for their role in the scheme?
We had filed a couple of these earlier. This is definitely the first wave. There may be one or two other cases out there on this that are not ours, but we had filed a couple of these previously in Ohio and I believe in South Carolina as well, and then we're filing these today. So I believe, though, there may be at least one other case that's on file involving this at this point.
Thank you. And for my follow-up, can you address a little bit here about how you know, these middlemen are kind of the last resort as far as getting this cash back. You know, I know that it
sure.
could be difficult to collect on someone that's on the lam.
Right. I mean, so let's go through the you know, opportunities for them to recover. You know, the attorneys general in many states have already said these contracts are unenforceable, and so the paper is worthless. And so the idea that they're going to get their money back from the paper as it is out the window. That's just not going to happen. Scott Kahn, I mean, like I said, we've got some pretty talented people to try and track him down. We haven't been able to. We got a lot of talented people on this phone. I'd love it if somebody could find a picture of the guy, but I can't. I don't know what kind of great internet service you've got to have to disappear your picture off the internet after you've raised hundreds of millions of dollars, but he's got it. So he seems to be gone. And if we find him, the chances, in my experience, after having done this for almost 20 years, of him having any money that we're going to be able to get back to our investors is very low. So what they're left with are losses, devastating losses. And so we look to who is responsible for that. Well, they're, you know, on the sort of, they're the last chance they have to get the money back because there is no other way for them to get the money back. The financial professionals, whether they're life insurance agents, they're investment advisors or brokers or the people that they work for, they have what's called a due diligence obligation. And what that means is just like what it sounds. If you're going to sell someone an investment, you've got to look under the hood and make sure that, you know, what's there is real and enforceable, and all the risks are presented fairly to your investors. That didn't happen here. That didn't happen with the investment advisors, and it didn't happen with the people that were the wholesalers that brought this product, who also had a due diligence obligation to these investment advisors. So that when I say kind of they're the last line of defense, because they, I'll tell you this, when I was working with Reichert and Protopapas, who I mentioned earlier, who brought this case to me, you know, the first thing I did is I got on my computer and I Googled FIP. And that amount of due diligence, the Google machine, was enough to tell me that this was not an investment that anyone should be in. I mean, California had shut these guys down in 15 or 16. They kept selling this till March of 18 in state after state. It's all detailed on FIP, F-I-P lawsuit, or lawsuits, I forget, or my PR guy will tell you, .com. But it'll tell you, this thing was being shut down time after time after time by in state after state after state, and they continued to sell it. And frankly, doing the Google, about a half hour worth of research on this, you know, uncovering that the guy who started this went to federal prison for counterfeiting computer parts in 2006 or 2007, that ought to have been a pretty big red flag too before you start pushing a bunch of this out the door. And so that's why, I mean, they're sort of the last line of defense. They should have caught this. The people above them should have caught this. The custodians never should have, that were the custodians for this, and the accountants that kept some of these money, they never should have done business with these people. Neither should the insurance companies who had agents that sold this stuff. So there's responsibility up and down the line. But at this point, we're starting to focus on the investment advisors. We'll speak with them. We'll attempt to work with them to resolve these cases, because I don't think most of them have enough money to pay back my clients. Then we're going to start looking at up the chain and starting to look at the distributors, starting to look at the life insurance companies, starting to look at the accountants and the custodians and everybody else. But since these folks were sort of the last line of defense before this went out and went into my people's account, we're starting with them.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That makes great sense. Thank you.
Yeah. This is Jason. Just one follow-up point to what Joe said, you know, kind of relating to his, you know, Google machine comment and how easy it was for him to figure this out. You know, Mr. San, one of our victims on the phone here today, mentioned in his opening remarks that he invested in 2016 or 2017. You know, the cat was out of the bag at that point, and it really, really would have been just that simple. to get the Google machine out and figure that out, and that would have saved Mr. San from having to deal with this.
Okay, operator, let's go to our next question, please.
Our next question comes from Greg Iresi with Investment News. Please go ahead. Greg with Investment News, your line is open.
Oh, sorry, I was on mute. So you guys said that you filed lawsuits, or there are about 368 investment professionals across the country who sold this stuff. How many lawsuits did you guys file today? How many investment professionals are included in these lawsuits that you filed today?
I think we've filed, today we filed five cases. We have a total of, I want to say, somewhere between 8 and 10 cases on file, and we have identified and are working on cases involving at least 60 or 70 investment advisors or insurance agents. And, I just want to remind everybody that, you know, what we're here talking about today is the rights of the investors. Everyone needs to remember that there were victims on both sides of the scheme. The press has previously reported heavily on the pensioners' rights, but we need to remember that the retirees that were victimized on the other side of the equation are these investors. The Attorney General's offices are fighting for the pensioners, and we're here to try to fight for the retiree investors who are robbed of their hard-earned money, and that's why we filed these cases today, and we'll continue to file, I expect, around this amount of cases, somewhere in the 8 to 10 range a week, until we've gotten through all of our inventory and have been able to tee up these cases.
Sir, would I be allowed to say something? This is Patricia Cook. Would I be allowed to say something?
Of course.
Thank you. I want you to know, all the years that I listened to Live Abundant and to the, quote, wealth architect that was assigned to us, neither of these people ever mentioned, said, or on a card or anything like that, that they were insurance sellers, brokers, representatives in any way, shape, or form. We were told in many, many years of listening to the head of Live Abundant, a huge organization to help people in the late years of their life, that they were out there to help people make good decisions. It is not once ever said anything about insurance. In addition to that, all of these seminars, and I confirmed this with other people that listened, they told the people listening at the seminars that they made their money from Doug Andrews selling books, that they were there to help people. If they had come into my house or told me we're insurance salesmen, I would have had a completely different point of view on this. These were supposed to be financial, you know, professionals that are telling people that's not their area of their life work. So I think this is a very important that they misrepresented themselves to us, or we wouldn't have been in this mess. Thank you.
Thanks, Trish.
I just have one follow-up question, if I could. So I just want to make clear I understand this investment scheme. It seems like there are two levels to it. On the one hand, you have these pensioners who gave up their future income stream in exchange for some sort of lump sum payment. And then on the other hand, you have the investors who bought into this FIP scheme and were promised some sort of future income stream in return for some sort of upfront payment that they made. Is that a pretty accurate representation?
I think you basically have that right. You know, just know, though, that the amount of money they were giving the pension, that FIP was giving the pensioners, was much smaller than the amount they were actually selling it to the investors for, if that makes sense to you.
Yes.
Okay,
great. At this point, I'd like to bring the operator back on the line to explain how members of the media can ask a question, just in case anyone was late to the call, so you know how to queue up. Operator, please.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, you may press star, then one on your touch-tone phone. To remove yourself from the queue, you can press star, then two. Again, it is star, then one to ask a question.
Thank you. All right, let's proceed to our next question, please.
Our next question is from Nick Thornton with Benefits Pro. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I'm wondering where the SEC and FINRA and state insurance regulators may have been or are now on this issue.
That is an extremely good question. We know that the SEC, that the SEC is investigating this, but where everyone else is, and we know that the attorneys general had done something, as I said earlier, on the pensioner side, on the people that were charged the usurious rates to get part of their pensions. But thus far, the SEC, FINRA, and the insurance regulators have really been nowhere to be found on the investor side, the people that lost their retirement savings on this. It is my fondest hope that bringing some attention to this issue will get some action from these regulators, because it's needed. It was needed when the scheme was going on, and it could have prevented a lot of these things from happening, but we're past that now, and it's still needed. For instance, as near as I can tell, and I will admit that I did not look this morning, but I have not seen FIP being put into a receivership or being put into bankruptcy or anything of that nature, and I'm somewhat surprised about that, because we have been contacted by some of the pensioners that even wanted to make their payment. They wanted to make their payment on the money that they had gotten from FIP, and they couldn't get anybody at FIP to return their phone calls. And I'll tell you what, I live in New Orleans most of the time, and I was there for Hurricane Katrina, and we could always get the insurance companies, no matter how busy they were during Katrina, to pick up the phone and take my premium check. And when you don't have anybody there to take the money that people want to give you, that's not a particularly good sign, and I'm not really sure why the regulators haven't come in and done anything about this quite yet.
Thank you. This is not a class action. These are individual suits being filed. Okay.
That's correct. It may turn out that the best vehicle is class actions, and we're still considering that, but at this time, we're filing individual actions.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, operator, let's go to our next question.
And our next question is from Arthur Postal with Life Annuity Specialist. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. My question is, what are the names of the insurance companies that you're looking at on this issue?
We know that Minnesota Life was heavily involved. That seems to be the major one.
Is that the only one?
It certainly seems to be the major one. It's the one that keeps coming up over and over and over again. We have heard of other ones, but I must say that and Jason or somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but that seems to be the major insurance policy that was sold along their insurance company that was involved.
Okay. Now, what is your name?
Oh, I'm sorry. I stopped doing that about halfway through the conference. I should know better. My name is Joseph Pfeiffer, P-E-I-F-F-E-R.
Okay. I got the information, but I just lose track of that.
It's okay.
Thank you.
Me too, sometimes.
But Minnesota Life is heavily involved, and that's the main one in the insurance industry.
That we have seen, correct.
Are you taking any action against them?
Not at this time, but we are investigating them, and I would anticipate that, depending on the results of that investigation, that we would be bringing an action against them.
Okay. Index annuities are sold by a group. They're independent distributors. Do you remember the name of them?
Who were the independent distributors?
These agents or whatever mostly retired people to sell these?
Are the people that sell these mostly retired people, or are they mostly sold to retired people?
Okay. They work for these independent sales organizations.
Yeah, you're talking about
they're not regular agents like Northwest Mutual or Massachusetts Mutual. There's
correct.
A name
they're not.
For them.
We've only seen a couple of instances where they have been what you would term a captive agent. Typically, it is correct that they are independent agents, and that these products were brought to them by field marketing organizations or independent marketing IMOs or FMOs.
That's the word, IMOs.
Yep.
Independent marketing organizations.
Exactly. I've seen it in both characterization.
Okay.
And so yes, we've seen the involvement of FMOs, and one of the big ones that we have seen is Sure West.
How do you spell that?
S-H-U-R-W-E-S-D.
S-H-U-R.
W-E-S-T. We have heard from many of our clients and some of the investment advisors that have talked to us that these products were brought to them by Sure West. That's by no means every single one of them or anything of that nature, but that is a name that crops up quite a bit.
Okay. Mr. Piper, I can't thank you enough. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
I appreciate that.
Appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you being on the call.
Thank you.
Okay. Operator, let's move to our next question, please.
Our next question is a follow-up from Len Boslovic with Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Please go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to check on something that was in the advisory that Khan is on the lam in the Philippines. Is that speculation or is that fact?
I think we'll put that credit. You may have gotten an earlier version of our draft there. That's speculation because we can't find him. And it's speculation but informed speculation. What we do know is we can't locate him. And what we do know is that the Philippines – that he has an LLC, FIP, Philippines Law, Limited Liability Corporation. And so the thought was that he might have gone over there. If you got that news advisory, we dialed that back because I don't know that for sure. I do know he's you know, not anywhere to be found on the Internet or otherwise, and we've attempted many, many times to get in contact with him. We can't find him, but I don't know that he's in the Philippines.
Thank you.
That was some speculation.
Okay. Well, I'm going to invite the operator back on the line to explain one more time how media can ask you questions in case we have any trailing calls before closing. Operator?
Sure. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, you may press star then one on your touchtone phone. Again, to remove yourself from the queue, you can press star then one. And once again, it is star then two. And once again, it's star then one to ask a question.
Thank you. A streaming audio replay of this news event will be available online later today at FIPLawsuit.com. That's FIPLawsuit.com, as will materials related to the case. And if you do have any questions or wish to be connected with any of the speakers you're hearing from today, you can contact Max Carlin at 703-276-3255. Operator, do we have any last questions?
Yes, we do have a follow-up with Alex Ebert with Bloomberg B&A. Please go ahead.
Thanks so much, everyone. So the thing that really strikes me about this is that it seems like these financial advisors and FIP had retirees coming and going. I mean, you know,
it's really kind of impressive in the saddest possible meaning of the word impressive, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, precisely. Can you guys speak to that, how, you know, it seems like this company exploited, you know, the most vulnerable, you know, people we have and their maybe unreasonable expectations, possibly realizable expectations, but in a way that really struck them, both ways as investors and, you know, people they purchase from?
Yeah, I mean, I think what they did was they went out and took, you know, step one they go out and get pensioners that are in desperate need of cash right now, and give them usurious, you know, highly usurious loans. And so basically think of it as upstream and downstream victims. Each one was sold something different, and each one was taken advantage of. On the downstream side, the pensioners got heavily discounted upfront lump sums in exchange for signing over some number of their future monthly pension payments. And then, so that's the first part of it. So they managed on the downstream part or on the pensioner side to screw over those folks to the tune of 200% on the interest rate. Then they repackage this and they sell it to the upstream folks, which are my clients, the investors. They put in a lump sum investment in exchange for the promise of a number of future monthly payments that would generate about 6 or 8% annual interest. FIP takes the difference. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, it really does. Do you know what that spread is? I mean, it seems like
it's enormous. It's enormous. I haven't calculated it, but it is extremely significant, and it's an indication of how much money was flowing around in this stuff that they ultimately got shut down.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
Thank you. Operator, are there any additional questions?
There are. We have a question from Teresa Murray with Cleveland Plain Dealer. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Just one quick question. It seems like a lot of the victims may have gotten money for some period of time. I'm just wondering if there was a tip, an average of what you found for how long people got what they expected before it all went bust.
It really just depends. We have, unbelievably, we have people that were sold this stuff in February, March of 2018. And so in that respect, they got almost nothing. And keep in mind, because of the way these things were sold, when they were sold coupled with these universal index life insurance policies, they needed these FIP payments to fund those policies, or those policies would ultimately lapse. So, let's say someone bought back in 16. Well, I mean, how in the world you could have justified selling this in 16 when the state of California has shut FIP down from getting contracts from pensioners in California, and there was, more red flags than a matador's closet existed in 16. So, you know, you should have never been sold this stuff. But let's say you got a 5 or 10 year FIP deal, and that was meant to fund your universal index life insurance policy. And let's say you got 2 years or a year and a half of the payments you were supposed to get. Well, you're still shy 8.5 years worth of payments. And if those payments don't get made in those universal index life insurance policy, it could go to it could lapse, go to zero, or become essentially worthless. So they really, you know, the way that this was set up, it needed to work, and it needed to be as safe and conservative as it was sold as being.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Excellent. Operator, do we have any additional questions at this time?
Yes, we have an additional question from Nick Thornton with Benefits Pro. Please go ahead.
Hey, am I wrong in understanding this is just your traditional Ponzi scheme, robbing Peter to pay Paul all the way along?
I haven't seen the books to know whether or not this was something that I would call a Ponzi scheme, but it certainly has the indicia of that kind of thing, where, you know, the money and I just don't have enough information to call it a Ponzi scheme, but let me tell you, we do a lot of Ponzi scheme work, and what I can tell you for sure is that they were selling what was ultimately worthless paper to my investors and my clients. And so whether that's a Ponzi scheme, not a Ponzi scheme, or whatever, they got something of value for something that was valueless.
Thank you.
Okay, operator, do we have any additional questions?
There are no further questions at this time.
Okay, thank you. So, just as a reminder, if anyone wants to access a streaming audio replay of the news event or get any of the materials related to the cases, you can go to FIPLawsuit.com. That's FIPLawsuit.com. You can also contact Max Carlin at 703-276-3255. That's 703-276-3255. We thank everyone for joining us for the media briefing, and that concludes today's news event.